Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Spaceflight This Week, an NSF podcast. I'm News Director Thomas Burkhart, bringing you a quick recap of the latest news in spaceflight for the week of March 13th, 2023. The first launch this week came from the Tanegashima Space Center in Japan, where JAXA and Mitsubishi launched the maiden flight of the new H-3 rocket. The vehicle lifted off under the power of its two main engines and two solid rocket boosters, successfully passing through max-Q, booster burnout and separation, fairing separation, main engine cutoff, and stage separation. The next milestone was to be stage 2 ignition, but this did not occur at the expected time, and once the mission was confirmed to be unrecoverable, the command was sent to terminate the flight. An investigation into the root cause of the failure is underway, but initial findings point to an electrical issue that prevented the second stage engine from igniting. While completely successful maiden flights of new rockets are rare, JAXA has faced some criticism for the decision to place the ELOS-3 satellite on the first launch, with the payload valued at $280 million. The payload was, of course, lost along with the rocket. In Florida, multiple launch complexes at the Cape Canaveral Space Force Station were allocated to upcoming launch providers on Tuesday. Launch Complex 15, which formerly supported the Titan rocket family, will be used by ABL Space Systems, the smallsat launch provider, which recently made its first albeit unsuccessful launch attempt in Kodiak, Alaska. Launch Complex 14, which supported early Atlas launches including the first crewed mission to orbit from the United States with astronaut John Glenn, has been allocated to the fully reusable launch startup Stoke Space. Space Launch Delta 45 confirmed to NSF that it will work with both Stoke and the State Historic Preservation Office to ensure that the history of the pad is preserved. Finally, Launch Complex 13 was allocated to be used by both Phantom Space and Via Space, a pair of smallsat launch startups. Complex 13 also supported early Atlas launches, and then in 2015, the land was leased to SpaceX for its current use as landing zones 1 and 2. SLD 45 also confirmed that Phantom and Via will be the only users of the site once the agreement has been executed, meaning that SpaceX plans to end its use of the pair of landing pads in the near future. Future options for Falcon booster landings include building new landing pads elsewhere at the Cape, or only conducting landings upon drone ships out at sea. For now, however, the landing zones are still in full use, including in this week's OneWeb Flight 17 mission. The last of three Falcon 9 launches in support of the OneWeb constellation lifted off from Space Launch Complex 40 on Thursday, ending with the successful deployment of all 40 satellites. The first stage, Booster 1062, successfully returned to Landing Zone 1, completing its 13th flight. Just before the OneWeb mission lifted off, United Launch Alliance rolled the first Vulcan rocket out to the pad at Space Launch Complex 41 to begin tanking tests. On Friday, teams loaded methane and oxygen propellants into the rocket's first stage and successfully checked off the first such tanking test. Following the successful test, ULA rolled Vulcan back to the VIF at Complex 41 due to inclement weather approaching the Cape. Once the rocket can return to the pad, teams will move on to Centaur tanking tests. After completing wet dress rehearsals, a flight readiness firing, and final pre-flight preparations including payload integration, Vulcan is targeting a first launch attempt in early May. At Launch Complex 16 at the Cape, Relativity Space has now made multiple attempts on the first flight of Terran 1, but the rocket remains on the ground. On the first day of launch attempts on Wednesday, liftoff was first delayed and then scrubbed due to issues with the temperature of the rocket's propellants. On the next attempts on Saturday, a first countdown was aborted just half a second before liftoff due to an issue with the stage separation system. The 9 first stage engines which had been firing were shut down, and the count was recycled for another attempt. That attempt was targeted at the very end of the window, but was aborted at T-45 seconds due to a low pressure reading on the upper stage. The next launch opportunity remains to be confirmed by Relativity, but hazard zones point to an earliest possible target of Thursday, March 16th. Early on Saturday, Crew Dragon Endurance departed the International Space Station with the 4 crew members of the SpaceX Crew 5 mission on board. Following the arrival of Crew 6 on board Endeavour, the Crew 5 mission departed the station and successfully splashed down Saturday night off the coast of Tampa, Florida. The crew of the ISS now sits at 7, with the Soyuz MS-22 and 23 crew of 3, and the SpaceX Crew 6 complement of 4 crew members. Down in Starbase, Texas, preparations continue for the upcoming orbital test flight of Starship. Booster 7 was removed from the orbital launch mount but has remained near the orbital launch site. The suspected explanation is that the booster was moved in order to access the inside of the launch mount for final closeouts. Back at the production site, engine installation is also ongoing on the Booster 9 vehicle, expected to power the ascent of the second orbital Starship mission after Booster 7 flies with Ship 24. While a first launch attempt in March remains on the table, April is beginning to seem possibly more feasible depending on launch site and regulatory readiness. That's all for the latest episode of Spaceflight this week. If you'd like to listen, watch, or read more spaceflight news, check out our other podcast, the NASA Spaceflight YouTube channel, or nasaspaceflight.com.